Nope. Here we go.
You see the people bend over backwards. I'm really nervous to date 25 people.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 99 for the week of January 4th, 2016. I am eligible nothing, David T. Cole, and I'm here with first night waste case, Sarah D. Bunting.
Just leave the bottle.
Contaminated hot tub, Tara Ariano.
I'm an STD broth.
And long blonde hair extension, Stephanie Green.
Amazing.
Welcome back to the show, Stephanie Green.
Thank you for having me back.
So happy to have you, and we're going to get to our lead topic in just a second. But first, a follow-up.
Yes, happy new year, everybody, and thank you so much for making the Law and Order draft and Law and Order week on the site, which we celebrated a few weeks ago now, such a success. We really had a good time with it, and in case there was any doubt in anyone's mind, Alan Sepinwall's draft slate did win the poll by at least one landslide, possibly a couple of lands. That's what happens when you pick Briscoe.
Yep.
I totally get it. And I updated that piece on previously.tv with the Donors Choose project.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Alan selected. Yes, for his winnings. It involves like the teacher like gets murdered and her students have to solve her murder, like, you know, napoli. So that was a very
That's
good
so cool.
choice. Well done. And it looks like we will be having other drafts in the future. Mm-hmm. Dave, would you like to update us about the Trek
yes.
draft?
Yes. So I think our next one, all things being equal, will be Star Trek, a pan-television Star Trek fantasy draft. I don't have an exact date for you, but we did have somebody that volunteered. David volunteered to run the whatever you call it, the tables, the board, the, you know, the
stuff,
the board. So he's, you know, he figured out all the categories. We added a couple, like a ship and stuff like that, but we're going to be choosing our captains and our science officers and our medical dudes and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So it'll be the same idea, just Star Trek, and I'm really into it. Like, when we did Law and Order, I was sort of making the team for myself. But since Sepinwall won such a landslide because he was playing to win, it really, like, set a fire. So for the Star Trek one, I'm really I have like a whole like strategy on the composition of my crew that I'm going to be aiming for. I'm going to have, it's going to be great. So, hopefully
coming in with phasers blazing.
Oh, you know it. So, so hopefully we can do these once in a while, maybe every couple months or something like that on the show. I think we have some ideas from our other ones. There's been whispers of a Whedonverse draft,
sure,
which would be interesting.
Yes.
So check up on that. I'll update people on the Star Trek one as we get a little closer.
We are not here today to talk about Law and Order or Star Trek. We are here to talk about The Bachelor, which Stephanie has been covering.
Season 20.
Which Stephanie has been covering for us since we started covering it on the site. The premiere, as we record this, was last night, 2 nights ago by the time you read this. And our Bachelor is Ben Higgins, a cast off from Caitlin's season of The Bachelorette. Stephanie, why don't you give us your broad strokes of how you think the season has gone thus far?
Okay. Ben is like beyond bland. There's bland, there's like Sean Lowe bland, and then there's Chris Sewell's bland, and then there's Ben Higgins bland, where he doesn't even seem like...
And then there's all of them in the same room.
Oh, God.
On the premiere. Like,
I mean, at least
stopped a couple times.
At least Jason Mesnick like dumped a lady on TV. The other two are just so like glacially boring, and Ben Higgins is also like, he doesn't even have anything offensive about him. There's nothing I can even grab onto to hate. I'm sure I'll find something.
Here was the first thing that I thought of, and you mentioned this in your post, which we will also link to in the show notes, and this came up when he was on Caitlin season 2. He is 26 and he somehow has gotten the idea that he might be unlovable, like categorically unlovable by any human person, which is
I don't think he actually believes that, though, Tara. I think that's a producer angle that they're trying to make him work, because he's like a hometown hero.
Right.
He went to Indiana University. Mm-hmm. He's like good looking, probably has had girlfriends his whole life.
Yeah.
And they're like, we got to make you relatable, I guess, or make people feel sorry for you or something. I don't know. I just don't think he actually thinks he's unlovable because a lady broke up with him one time.
He's
one,
just like, so good looking. It's weird that he would be that insecure, but you're right. I don't know why.
I don't think he is.
I don't know why I'm taking everything at face value after watching an entire season of Unreal when I know all of this is, I mean, I already knew that, but like, especially after watching Unreal, it's impossible to watch this without having that in the back of your mind, like how much it's manipulated.
Totally. Yeah.
Let's talk about Sheila, because you guys both are in love with Sheila the chicken.
I love Sheila. I love Sheila. I love Sheila's, like, and all chickens look like this all the time. It's part of why I love chickens. But just her, like, blasé, like, she's just sitting on Tiara. Is that her name?
Yeah. Tiara is how she pronounces it.
While she brushes
like totally blasé, like, what's up? We're just brushing our teeth. I will be brushing, but I don't have any teeth because I'm
for those
just, like, totally mellow. Love it.
For those who didn't watch, there is a contestant named Tiara. I missed if she even got a rose at the ceremony. I feel like she didn't. I don't recall.
We're not sure. I tried to pull the internet to find out. They were very cagey about it in the show, and I cannot find evidence of whether she made it to next week or not. So.
Okay, but
she has never been away from her chickens, plural, for more than 10 days.
And her designation, like where they have, you know, usually where your job is, except for that one girl whose job is unemployed. But Tierra's is chicken enthusiast, not even like chicken farmer, just like fan of chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I would want mine to be, should I ever end up on this part of a show.
Wow, how, yes. Like, no prospecty do you have to be to actually get the unemployed Chiron on a reality show?
Well, I'm assuming a lot of them are unemployed, but got cutesy, like, cowgirl. Yeah. Like, she's not a professional cowgirl, please. chicken enthusiast. Twin.
Yeah.
But that poor sap got actually just unemployed. She couldn't get, like, a cute, like, I don't know, moniker, like hoverboard enthusiast. She was the one who came in on a hoverboard,
right.
FYI.
So
she's spending that unemployment check wisely, we can see.
They must be able to say whatever they want in that space, because I remember in Caitlin's season, there was one guy whose designation was freelance sex coach, and I'm pretty sure that was not...
Canadian!
Or amateur sex coach, one of them, something like that, which is clearly not a job, just something that he thought would be hilarious. Can we talk about the twins for a second?
Yeah.
Only a second, because that's all the material I
have. Okay, there are twins that are both on the show in the same season. Their names are Haley and Emily. I don't know which is which. Doesn't matter. No. But they, like, really lean into... I mean, the whole reason that you cast twins on a show like this is because of, like, the stereotype of, like, men fantasize about being with twins. But, like... As I tweeted last night, unless these two girls are not planning to at least French each other, they should be arrested for fraud, because they are absolutely, like, really leaning into this stereotype of, like, why that is a thing that supposedly men fantasize about, which is the idea of, like, sleeping with two identical girls, I guess. But, like, obviously nothing's gonna happen. Like,
well, I don't think they're going to actually make it very far.
No, probably
not. Or are they? I don't know.
I thought it would have been more interesting if he only picked one of them. Because, like, as if he could tell which one was which, or, like, he only talked to them both together.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We should talk about Lace, or as Dave dubbed her last night, Sarah Goldman, because Dave...
She's a better-looking Sarah Silverman.
Is she better-looking?
Well, she's very similar looking.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's more magazine ready. You know, when she's not drunk,
drunker.
When she's not the drunk chick from Winnipeg.
Poor Lace.
Poor Lace. Yeah. Poor everybody else.
I don't actually feel sorry for her.
Yeah. No, I don't either.
Oh, no.
She's kind of a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's going to be the interesting one.
I feel
one,
like,
right?
There's one like that at every first cocktail party who you're just like, is she going to barf? I'm not going to barf. I lost the bet with myself about Lace blurfing on someone's shoes. I'm sure. The whole eye contact thing was like just her trying to maintain.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's why it's so important to her, like, fixed point on the horizon. No sudden moves.
Well, she's like fatal attraction crazy. You know, like she seems to have that DNA in her as opposed to Flowerhead Lady, who just seems to be like phased from the rest of the universe. She's just not like quite part of our world. A couple other ones, like there was one that brought a horse.
Yeah.
There was one that like leapt up in his arms. Like I really wanted to see him fumble that.
Kayla.
Yeah. So there's like a good amount of zany craziness going on, but Lace seems like the import from like a Bravo reality show. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like she's going to get drunk. She's going to get mean. She's going to be basically like a housewife, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we want her to stick around, because otherwise this season could be a little boring, I'm thinking.
And all the zaniness is completely, like, made up and assigned, so...
Right.
I just feel like...
Yeah.
I don't understand, like, okay, so I don't understand what went through his head, if it wasn't a producer, that said, yeah, you gotta pick that lady with the rose, she's something. She's got a rose on her head. She's wearing all the eyeshadow in the world. Yeah. She was just like a wet, hot mess.
I think she might have also had like eyeliner lines down the sides of her nose like a drag queen, but I cannot confirm or deny that. I looked at her face very intensely today.
Yeah, because she was like
Mandy.
Uncomfortably crazy. Like it wasn't fun. It wasn't sort of like, oh, this, you know, this is a firecracker. No, she was like, I might have to like put my cat in a different room while she's here, kind of.
All right.
Maybe he doesn't have dental.
She did give him a free dental exam.
The other thing is that like, yeah, okay. Anyways.
Who do you think was the most pathetic bachelorette that we saw? Dave, was that your nominee?
Pathetic?
Yeah.
I probably would say Lace for her like blubbering and then taking him, you know, like I realize that it's an attention tactic and that somehow some people equate time with Bachelor equals success. But that seemed like the try hardiest anyways.
That's what you said too, Stephanie.
Yeah, because, I didn't put this in my piece, but at one point she said, I just want him to like me. And it's just that sad, you know?
Yeah.
That's real sad.
Sarah?
I would go with the redhead. She was not selected. And then she had an exit talking head that I think in some other dimension is still going on. she was completely out of things to say. You could kind of see at some points, I think she may have been reading a cue card. Mm-hmm. And I really wish just every now and then someone would, it's like the boxers or legal briefs joke. Like I just wish someone would go off script once in a while and just be like, I don't want to do this, or like freeballing next. I just don't, not that he has enough imagination to do that. I think they're probably going to have to keep at least Ben's part in things pretty tightly scripted, because I just think otherwise he's like sitting in the charger. There's just not a whole lot.
like a blank robot.
They just sit in the chair and plug themselves into the outlet.
Totally. His fingers just slightly flick. It's a tie between the girl who gave Ben a save the date card for their wedding when she met him.
Yeah.
And that's, to hold.
That's one
what
wrong.
I mean, though. Like, girl, you don't have to do that.
No.
You don't have to let them do that to you.
Yeah.
It is a free country. You can leave.
That's like one rung below sexy coupon book.
Yeah, but it's also like all the time they have to catch the girls and like make them say things like, I guess I'm gonna have to get used to him dating all these other girls. Like, no, you can leave. You don't have to do any of this. You were not drafted to do this just because you work at a bar in LA. Anyway, a tie between that girl.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yep. And the two returnees from past seasons, which give up, especially the one who's been on two previous seasons. Pathetic. Amber.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I?
She was on Bachelor in Paradise and Bachelor. So, not awesome. Yeah.
Most contrived entrance. Can we do that?
Mm.
Because the girl who did the football hike in the dress that didn't really work for the football hike.
Yeah.
And she was really kind of fumbling with her dress.
Yeah.
In a way that I thought she was basically going to hike it up into her stuff.
Yeah.
That was really painful to watch. Not only for the mechanics of it, the actual hiking, but also, you know, the actual concept. And he's like, hey, football.
I was not a fan of Kayla, the leaping into the arms girl, but I have to give it to the, I don't know her name, but the one who showed up in pajamas and then said, I wanted to know if you were the onesie for me, because A, stupid line, and B, now you're sitting around a cocktail party with everyone else in gowns and you're in fucking children's pajamas. Think it through. Although I respect the pajama part. Sarah?
Did she leave those on?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She didn't have a backup.
She was standing in them at the rose ceremony. Like, you think you're going to get a rose?
I totally missed that. You know what? That is great. Good for her. And also, you could tell that she was just, like, looking at the camera like, do I really have to, I got to say the whole line? She's, like, waiting for him to jump in. And then she's like, oh, you're too dumb to save me. Let's see. I think boxers or legal briefs was my worst on that list, just because I made a note of it in all caps and then wrote a lot of swears. Like, I can't.
Stephanie?
So many choices. I was confused by the woman who only spoke Russian to him.
Yeah, that was weird.
And a lot of Russian.
I don't know what her angle like one is sentence. With that one.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it showed her in the cocktail party too, only speaking Russian to the other ladies, so that was weird. And then the girl who came in with the unicorn head, I was like, why did you just spend like $400 getting your hair done and then put a unicorn head over it? Like, and then she took it off and her hair was all messed up. Like, come on, lady, use your head.
Not
the unicorn head.
Not the unicorn head, which is rubber.
Do you have any, does anyone have early picks for who's going to win?
I want to see that guy fuck that horse.
The mini horse?
Yeah.
I think that lady went home.
Oh, really?
But I don't know if she horse stayed. Did she? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
You go. The horse stays. Bachelor season 20. Never say nay.
I'm afraid Olivia, the newscaster, is going to go far.
Mm-hmm.
And Kayla. For some reason, I think Kayla might go far.
Because it's so romantic that she and Ben are both in software sales, as she said.
Yeah, they have a lot in common.
I also thought, as soon as Olivia got out of the limo, I said, Dave can confirm, she's going to win. That's my pick. And then she got the first impression rose, and I was gratified. I mean, not that I care who wins, but
then
for
she
the
said
part
something,
of being right.
Like,
yeah, well, then when she sat down with him, she was like, I left my job to do this. I'm like,
oh right.
You're dumb.
Yeah.
I don't respect that, but I still think that she,
also, what a
she
stupid
a
thing
shot.
To say and put the guy on the defensive. Like, you know, so, you know, no pressure, but I just changed my whole life for you. I know you don't know me, but yeah. Did all this stuff. Like, what a, like, desperate and unfortunate thing to say to somebody you're trying
to that kind of reminded me of, there's a certain code to, like, Times wedding announcements, which I don't make a practice of reading, primarily because the following thing happens often enough, which is, like, the bride, you know, the new Mrs. whoever, was formerly a vice president at Goldman Sachs, and it's like, oh, you quit to plan the wedding.
You
sucker.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
It's just so, and it happens that you read it a lot and you're like, and now what are you going to, oh, that's right. You're going to move to Melbourne and start trying to have kids. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but come on. Mm-hmm. Don't quit your job to plan a wedding. That's.
But that's kind of the thing with the show. I've said this in the past in some of my pieces is that, like, especially when it's The Bachelor versus The Bachelorette, the assumption is that the women will all just, like, fit into the bachelor's life. Whoever he picks will have to, like, go with his furniture, kind of, you know, like,
right, totally.
They always use that language too. I just want to make sure she can fit into my life. So there is an assumption that she better not have her own career, or at least a career that would demand that she not live in his hometown, or be able to pretty much move wherever he wants to move, because The Bachelor sort of sets the rules. That's my observation of the last however many seasons I've watched.
Yeah, which is why it was so weird that they picked Chris to be a bachelor, because he lived in like the literal middle of nowhere in like a half horse town. That was so bad.
And yet
that they
those
had to
women
show
pretended
them
to be willing to move there, yeah, even though there was nothing there.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Well,
pretty sad.
I look forward to watching this season along with you, Stephanie.
Oh, are you actually going to watch?
Well, I'm going to continue doing my dating show crazy face posts, which are my joy. Although it was a lot harder to do them without Caitlin sucking her teeth the whole time. But I managed to find a few crazies, so I'll link that in the show notes as well. But yeah, now I have to stick around at least and see if I end up being right about Olivia. So yeah,
awesome.
Is this worse than jazz?
Actually, we've renamed this segment temporarily to Is This Worse Than Kratz? We wanted to take a minute to talk a little bit about the Netflix series Making a Murderer that everyone is talking about. It dropped December 18th. I was pleased to join our esteemed colleagues Eve, Chris, and Allison in covering it. I am just going to assume listeners know the story, because how can you even get into it, you know? So Stephen Avery, shanghaied twice, it seems, by the state of Wisconsin, and there was just an update today that a juror in his second trial had reached out to the filmmakers, Demosin Ricciardi, I think is how you pronounce her last name, to say that he or she had basically voted guilty because they feared for their personal safety.
Ooh.
During deliberations, and there was a lot of horse trading, and it seems like he was definitely framed for this second murder, whatever happened.
Like from somebody, or just generally the miasma of badness that the town seems to exist. Like, was
right? You mean like, was there a specific threat?
Yeah,
from another. I believe someone else in the room.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Another juror made Jesus. This person feel unsafe, whether directly or indirectly. I don't know. That doesn't surprise me. So I assume you guys have all watched.
Oh yeah,
yep. Yep.
The whole series. Yeah, it's. I really, as anger-making as it is, I really have to give the filmmakers credit. It was a very long project. They did a great job. I understand some people have some issues with the, like, thumb on the scale or sort of the agenda of the filmmakers, but I don't have an issue with that. It's a really nice piece of work, and it's an ongoing story, which is always very exciting and is turning into, like, the serial of Netflix, at least as far as Reddit topics is concerned.
The brain trust over at Reddit.
Well, yeah, but if you're looking to sort of like talk with other people,
yeah,
or you
sure
can't like let go of the experience of watching it yet, it can be fun to disappear down a Reddit hole. In any case, I do feel that Ken Kratz is definitely worse than jazz. Everything about him is worse than jazz, especially his mustache, which is like, ugh. The verdict is worse than jazz. Making a Murderer itself as a piece of art, not worse than jazz.
Right.
What say the rest of you?
Hey, can I just ask a question? I can't remember if I went on this rant last time we talked about this or whether I was just for Tara's ears. But did they ever, either on the show or off the show, talk about, what was, you remember I was saying, like, the lack of blood DNA or just blood, like buckets of blood everywhere? In the spot where they supposedly killed her. Like, you know, the only thing, that, it was like such a quick mention. It's like, well, if you slash her throat, there should be like pints of blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they put her in like a turtle, you know, kid's pool or something before they killed her. And then but they just brought it up and it was like 10 seconds and that's it. But it seems like such a major thing. Like, where's the blood evidence?
How do you
evidence?
Explain this? Like, here's the bed that we supposedly killed her on, completely blood-free. We're
that
looking
just,
at it because it doesn't have a sheet on it.
But what that made me think, like, okay, was that explained in the trial?
Right.
Or, like, whose omission was that? The filmmakers? Or, like, you know, in the courtroom.
Yeah, to me that seems that's the end of the argument, really. But
yeah,
I think there is a Vulture piece on this. Vulture has done a fair bit of coverage about it that has been quite enlightening. I'll try to find it for the show notes, but I believe they did address this as sort of saying, or the defense team said, like, we were trying to counter what the prosecution was saying, and I think if the prosecution didn't necessarily bring that up, then the defense didn't have an opportunity to, but everything I know about, like, the rules of, like, bringing evidence in on cross comes from Law and Order. Maybe Stephanie would like to correct me on that.
But then can't you just bring in your own expert and say, like, there should have been more blood here?
Right.
I don't know. That whole thing was just really kind of suspect.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Sorry.
Sarah, are you talking about they can't introduce new evidence on cross that wasn't introduced?
Right, like if the prosecution was sort of building its physical case and didn't mention, only mentioned a certain, like, very narrow class of evidence to do with the blood. I don't know what the rule is for the defense, like, bringing it up themselves.
No, the defense should have been able I took evidence, like, 7-8 years ago. But, and all I remember from it, and I also passed the California bar, and yet here I am, flailing. But I remember that, you know, if the defense opens the door, then the prosecution can walk through it. So I think it's up to the defense to introduce, if they want to talk about the physical evidence or lack thereof, then the prosecution can go after that, right? I'm saying that like you guys know. I'm the worst lawyer ever. So
I mean, that was my understanding from, you know, Jack McCoy. So hey, if that's correct, I will continue.
I think we're saying the same thing. But I was confused about that too. I was wondering whether that was just the filmmakers chose to leave out that part of the trial, that testimony, because I can't imagine that they would have gone through the whole trial without one or both of the sides making a lot out of whatever physical evidence may have been in his trailer. It doesn't even make sense. And those defense attorneys weren't going to let that go if there wasn't any physical evidence, which makes me think there was physical evidence. And we just didn't hear about it in the documentary because it didn't fit in with what the filmmakers were trying to get across. And along the same lines, I've heard other criticisms about the filmmakers leaving out a lot of damning evidence against Avery that wasn't included in the film but was brought up at trial. So that might explain too part of the way that jurors reached their decision. But, I mean, I still agree that the process was completely messed up, but I do think the filmmakers left a lot of stuff out.
Yeah, I think it would have been a stronger show if they, like, that was my impression, that something got left out by the filmmakers. That was my guess, that there was something that didn't quite fit into the narrative they were telling. And, you know, you have whatever it was, you know, 10 hours to tell this tale. I think it should have been a little more, you know, full and kind of, you know, damning evidence as well, you know, like, because that's compelling to me. Anyways, sorry for that sidebar there. Are we all enjoying the jazz underneath this thing about the...
I will say that now that it's like, I mean, we probably watched the last one over a week ago, and in that time, I'm like less certain that it was a total frame job. The only thing I do feel still as strongly about is the way that the Brendan Dassey part of it was handled is fucking horrifying. Like,
horrible.
This poor child had no idea what was happening. Obviously, no one around him was equipped to like help him properly, and like, you know, the idea that these two investigators were like, well, we called his mother and she declined to come in. Like, I just don't believe that for a second. And I don't think they were otherwise, you know.
And I don't believe that matters anyway. Like, then you have to let him go.
He's a minor child. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's the end of it. Right. But anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Tara. It was hard to watch. All the Brendan Dassey stuff was hard to watch.
And it was just as hard to watch Dean Strang talking about it even 10 years later. And just becoming extremely emotional about this poor kid who, like, weirdly seems sort of content. Like, I think he has a structured life and is, like, okay where he is. But, I mean, talk about being born buried under every possible eight ball.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, always so ask for a lawyer, guys. Even if you didn't do anything, ask for a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, yeah. Sarah, on your jazz and not jazz decisions.
It's hard not to.
Yeah. All right.
Nothing is worse than Kratz.
We also have a sponsor, April, who writes, on Extra Hot Great, I want to wish a happy birthday to my best friend of 27 years. Good grief, Emily Goodacre. Aww. She may have thought that those candy cane snowball cookies were the whole of her birthday gift, but surprise! A happy birthday is coming her way from the extra hot, from the crew at Extra Hot Great. Here it is, stumbled over by moi. After all, without this podcast, we might make the mistake of calling Eggy Bread Wonderlatch by his real name like normies. How embarrassing.
Happy birthday, Emily. And we got you something, but we'll leave it at the end of the show for you. Also, I want to say Emily Goodacre is a fantastic Harry Potter name.
All right, welcome to the Blotter Presents. Yes. Stephanie will be taking over for me this week with a list of true crime show anchors. Stephanie.
Yes, I decided to rank, select Dateline, NBC, and 48 Hours hosts and or correspondents in reverse order of how endearing I find their tics.
Hold on one moment.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. This is important.
There is only 5 people on my list. So let's start with number 5, Troy Roberts. Troy Roberts sounds like a robot doing a Shatner impression. He also never smiles. I think this is because it's so exhausting trying to pass for human. I mean, he really tries, you guys. He tries so hard. So he's my number 5. Number 4 is Erin Moriarty. She's the lady with the blonde bob and steely blue eyes. I really like her voice, and I'm pretty sure that I would wither under her no bullshit questioning style. She is legit. And also, she's a former lawyer, so I appreciate that about her.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I don't know if she ever practiced law, but she passed the bar and graduated law school, so... good for her. Number 3 is Lester Holt. Yeah. He is not a correspondent. He is the Dateline anchor, and he is fantastic. His 3-piece suits add a certain gravitas to the proceedings that I greatly enjoy. My husband and I call him Hester Lolt, and I expect that everyone will start doing that from here on out.
My husband calls him the poreless wonder, and he really is. He's great.
It's impossible not to love him.
Oh, I love him so much. Number 2 is Keith Morrison. There's a surprise coming your way. I'm not good at doing Keith Morrison impression because my voice is like 8 registers too high, but here are a couple of representative things Keith Morrison might say. One is, well, number 2 is, you know how young love can be. Here's another one. You remember the one, that shoe that was left behind. Here's my last one. Bluff Springs is the kind of place folks like to raise a family. So those aren't real Keith Morrison quotes, but they're close enough. I think Morrison's weird, drawly narration style is legendary. At least it is in my own household. And in case you needed another reason to be intrigued by Keith Morrison, he's a secret Canadian. He's from Saskatchewan.
I didn't know he was from Saskatchewan. I was going to add, though, that he is Matthew Perry's stepfather, I believe.
What?
I believe that is correct. I'm gonna look it up while you're telling us your number one.
Oh, my God. Now okay, my number one pick. Have a whole side, like, piece like Keith Morrison facts, true or false.
He's fascinating.
I would believe almost anything. He's part crab.
He is confirmed. He is Matthew Perry's stepfather.
Wow.
There you go. Number one is a controversial pick. This might just be my own whatever. This correspondent speaks to me. Maureen Maher. So I had to go with her as number one because she's so weird. She stands really stiff and holds her fingers together like her first two fingers have to touch her other first two fingers and her elbows are out. I'm not sure if her hair is a wig. She's always wearing a permanent leather jacket. She's also from Metro Detroit, just like me. And I just want to know so much more about Maureen. For example, does she always stand with her hands like that? Or is there a Maher at ease position? Is she in an all-lady journalist biker gang? And that's why she always wears that leather jacket. Why is she always hanging out in an empty warehouse with tasteful lighting? Who styles her bangs? And other questions.
That have you was ever seen her and Lily from the Verizon ads together?
Oh my God. Is she Lily's mom? She could
she
be.
Is. Or like cousins. Something's going
older
on.
Older sister.
Awesome yeah. list. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. It's time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara.
So it was Christmas. There was not a lot of new TV happening, which is why I was able to knock 40% off my DVR. Thank you so much. Took a lot of work, watched a lot of terrible movies. However, one of the few new things that was on was the Call the Midwife special, which, unlike Downton Abbey, was aired on PBS just several hours after it aired in the UK. I've talked about Call the Midwife before. It's like my go-to cry show. I've heard from people who actually have children. It is too triggering. It's like too emotional. They can't watch it. I get it. This one was no exception. It was like an extra long one. And there was a whole storyline with Sister Monica Joan, the best nun and also the one who has dementia, finding her way back to her ancestral family estate, which is now like all in disrepair, and going there because she thought she was going to die. And it's a whole Bethlehem story. And it was adorable. And so the other crusty nun comes and finds her and brings her home. And then there's I got through almost all of it thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to cry this time. And then they showed all of the nuns helping Sister Monica Joan out of Nanata's house to take her to a recording of a live Christmas Eve mass, which they were going to sing on, that was going to be televised because TV is brand new. And I lost it. It's called The Midwife. It's so good. My one complaint is Miranda Hart is now getting so famous. She was just in Spy last summer. If you saw that, she was the friend of Melissa McCarthy, the really, really tall lady. She's getting too famous to be on the show anymore. And she was like the best thing about it. So as much as I am happy for her success in the abstract, I really need Chummy to come back to Call the Midwife. It's getting dire and it's not the same show without her. And I also want to mention, since I said Downton Abbey, give a plug at this point for my coverage of Downton Abbey. My first particle went up as you hear this 2 days ago for the season premiere of the final season, season 6. Downton Abbey is still ridiculous. I'm sure we will talk about it at more length at some point on this podcast, but there's a lot to look forward to. And I'm going to tell you, as someone who has flown to England and watched the first 7 episodes at this point, a lot more Matthew Good this season, and I am here for it. I also want to mention that Hollywood Game Night Show and Yell podcast, which I do with Joe Reed, is coming back. By the time you hear this, it will have gone up a few hours ago. So we will be continuing to dissect that ridiculous, dumb show in an incredible amount of detail. So check that out.
Okay. My pick is Last Tango in Halifax. I feel like whenever I'm on the podcast, I talk about old British TV. Not old, but, you know, not new. So this is from the same person, Sally Wainwright, who created Scott and Bailey, which I've talked about before,
yes,
and Happy Valley, both of which are great. Last Tango in Halifax aired in the UK on BBC One in late 2012, but I started watching it just this last year on my local PBS station, because my mom told me about it. Thanks, Mom. It is so good, you guys. It's about a man and a woman. They're in their 70s. They're both widowed. They were childhood sweethearts, and then they reconnect on Facebook 60 years later. And the show is about what happens when their two families, which are very different culturally and class-wise, are thrown together because these two people get married. And like all of Wainwright's stuff, it has really complicated, well-drawn characters, and it gets at some really gritty, funny, like hard stuff about family relationships, especially mother-daughter relationships. And there's tons of great British actors. There are these wonderful Northern English accents. This one takes place in North Yorkshire. It's funny and it's dark, and I love it. So you should watch it. All 3 seasons are on Netflix, so you don't have to depend on the vagaries of your local PBS station to watch it.
Since Stephanie is apparently too modest to mention it, as we mentioned up top, she will be covering The Bachelor this season, and Stephanie is also covering Married at First Sight for us, season in progress. And you can follow her on Twitter at ETEFFI.
Next up, Sarah.
The show The Art of More, which is on Crackle. What is Crackle? I'm still not sure, but you can watch television programs on your phone with it. I'm not sure if it's actually a network or if it's just some weird, like one of those radio stations that only transmits a single Morse code letter. It's actually a drug code. Could be. It's actually much more exciting than The Actual Art of More, which I found potentially interesting for two reasons. One, it's set at a fictional auction house in New York, and I thought there might be some fun processy art heist stuff going on. And secondly, Dennis Quaid, who I have made the mistake of following into various other TV blunders, like Vegas, I guess it was, where he played a cowboy sheriff.
Oh, yeah. With Chiklis, right? Polyps.
Yeah. It was really not good. Yeah. It actually hung on for like 15 episodes, and then someone realized it was still on. guess we should cancel it. It's really not good. It should be much better than it is, but it makes that mistake of like focusing on the younger characters because it assumes that that's how you get the younger demographic in, even though the younger characters are like these bland, by numbers douchebags that get bland by numbers dialogue, and in one case are played by bland by numbers Kate Bosworth.
No, like, wow. God.
Yep.
American culture, you got to stop trying to make that shit happen. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So yeah, she's very pretty. I'm sure she's kind to animals. No interest in anything that she's talking about or doing when she's on screen. Please quit it.
Yep.
As fun as it has been for the last couple of days to refer to the show as The Art of Bore or The Fart of More, there will be no more. It did get renewed for season two, but I couldn't even get through two full episodes.
Well, you tried.
Also renewed for another year, our esteemed colleague John Ramos, who is celebrating his birthday as we record this today. He's a writer, a producer, and a once-in-future National Bridge champion and a wonderful friend. Read his work at previously.tv, where he covers The Flash, Nashville, and Poldark, among other things for us. And
he will be covering Legends of Tomorrow as well.
Oh, yes, that's right. And I would like to wish him many Megan Rotundi returns on his natal day.
Happy birthday, John. You're going to love being 24.
I think John would agree with me when I say the only thing Kate Bosworth should be doing is creating a Blue Crush TV series.
Yes.
And just have that for six or seven seasons and then go quietly into the night.
Yep.
All right, rounding us off, I just want to talk about the Lucifer pilot, which I guess has been out in the wild for a while. I didn't realize it.
Is that true?
Yeah.
It doesn't premiere until January 25th.
I think maybe they had a sneak somewhere or something. Oh, maybe at like Comic-Con or something.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So basically they took the Sandman premise. That's the character Lucifer as written in the Sandman comic book, which this is supposedly based on. Mm. But the only thing they really took from that was that he retires from being, you know, the king of hell. And runs a club in LA called Lux, and they just threw away everything else apparently and just made this like a CBS-y procedural. Like it really just is like it could have been like shown after Elementary, like it's almost the same kind of, you know, CBSification of something, you know.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So to give you an idea how bad it is, one of the first shots is him in his like whatever, you know, 60s or 70s sports car with a license plate, fallen one.
I missed that.
Nope.
The music of the seven songs that were identified for this episode, No Rest for the Wicked, Devil's Haircut, and one called Sinister Kid with the lyrics, "That's me, the boy with the broken halo." So basically, the music director, whoever is, just went on iTunes and threw some keywords, and then like basically threw those into the show. It's terrible. It's a terrible show. I didn't really have high hopes for it, but I just like that the character of Lucifer inside of the Sandman comics and the spinoff Lucifer that they did a few years later are great. They're really good reads. So don't judge those by the TV show if you check out the pilot. It's terrible. Maybe we'll have better luck with Preacher, which trods on some of the same sort of, you know, gods and men ground that Lucifer does. And I think that's
AMC, right?
Yeah.
So at least it's probably going to push the violence and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Preacher is crazy, crazy story. Yeah, that's a good read, too. Anyways, so... Lucifer, you have my permission to pass on that.
More like Lucifer.
Yes. All right, everybody. It is time for the canon. Joe was going to submit this week, but then he got busy and couldn't be here. So he recorded it. So here is Joe's remote canon submission.
Hello to my extra hot great family. I'm sorry that work obligations are keeping me from the podcast today, but I am happy to be presenting this week's canon episode in absentia. It is a show in general and an episode in particular that I really think deserves to be in the canon. I'm surprised I actually haven't brought it up by now, but I'm doing it today. So it is Enlightened, Season 1, Episode 9, titled Consider Helen. Up to this point in the first season of Enlightened, the show has been presented to us through the perspective of Laura Dern's character, Amy Jellicoe. And one of the things that always made the show so special to me was how it constantly illustrated the gulf between the Amy that she wanted to be, the Amy in her head. She was always more articulate and wise, often poetic. This was the Amy of the voiceovers, who would often close out episodes with these sort of mantras that would be unexpectedly and sort of improbably wonderful. And then so the gulf between that Amy and the Amy that she actually was when she, you know, in her real life. It was nicely dramatized little way of presenting the show, and I think it was a fairly truthful depiction of the way our best selves in our head can immediately fall away when faced with adversity or just when faced with other people in general. But up until Consider Helen, all we'd seen of Amy's mother, played by Laura Dern's real-life mother, Diane Ladd, was Helen as a negative, sort of passive-aggressive nag of a mom. Just not quite stereotypical, but, you know, that kind of a mom. She wasn't a total villain, because Amy was obviously not an easy person to live with, and the show never made too many bones about that. But certainly not a figure of too much sympathy. So Consider Helen is, as the title implies, a break in the season to follow this character for a day. The episode is bookended by scenes with Amy, but otherwise Amy isn't present in the episode at all. The episode begins with Amy, first thing in the morning, sort of barnstorming her way through the kitchen, coughing all over the place without covering her mouth, I should mention. I'm sure you guys noted that because
Yep.
Get it together, Amy. And Helen, in that familiar position of nagging her daughter about, is she getting a cold, and she's not seeming to connect to what Amy's trying to accomplish at work. She's doing that thing that moms sometimes do of sort of trying to solve the smaller problems rather than, you know, the bigger problem of what Amy's trying to do at Abaddon. And other than that, we don't really hear very much about what's going on at Abaddon. So this really is like a break from the season that we had been getting up to this point. So leading us to clip number one.
You got a call?
Oh, no, I'm just coughing.
You're sick, Amy?
No, I've just got something in my throat.
Well, don't cough all over the food.
I'm just too tired to live. If I didn't have the Gestapo all over me, I'd phone in sick.
My God, Amy, you look awful.
What?
Are you going to go to work like that?
Like what? Well, I'm going to put my shoes on. What's my dress? What?
Okay, you are sick.
No, Mom, I'm just tired, okay?
You didn't sleep?
No, actually, I was up till 3.
Maybe you should take a sleeping pill, I guess. That's what I do sometimes.
I wanted to be up, okay? I had an email to write, and it was a difficult email. I had to get it right.
Oh, honey, don't write emails at night. You get your imagination going and you get ideas. You said yourself that people at work think you're hyper.
It wasn't for work, okay? It was to Levi.
Oh, okay. Okay, I don't want to know.
Well, you'd be happy, actually.
Why?
So for as much of a hurricane as Amy is, once she does leave for work, the house gets incredibly quiet, which we see. Helen sits alone with her birds and her photos and her tchotchkes until she decides to take a trip to the grocery store. And once there, she runs into a very old friend of hers named Carol, played by Barbara Barry. This scene goes on for about 6 minutes or so. It's a third of the episode's running time, and it is just the most riveting supermarket conversation between two old ladies that you've ever seen. It is, and I'm not even lying when I say that, I think it's absolutely, like, thrilling to watch, kind of. I've tracked it down on YouTube several times and watched it just on its own. It doesn't hurt that it's two Oscar-nominated actresses in one scene, and as much as I think it's a crime that Diane Ladd didn't get an Emmy nomination for this show, and I do, it's equally galling that Barbara Barry doesn't have a guest actress trophy on her mantle right now either, because she's so good in this. She plays Carol with an instantly recognizable kind of predatory friendliness that you've seen if you've seen, like, your mom have to talk to friends of hers when they get into that sort of subtly bragging about their lives and finding excuses to bring out the photos of the kids and the grandkids, and sort of this, the way she speaks is incredibly familiar to me, and it's very realistic and compelling in its way. But you can see Helen is basically sort of dodging landmines and trying to avoid talking, like reciprocating about her own life, because what's going on with her family, with Amy and her troubles and all this, she doesn't want to get into that. She ultimately does very little bit. She mentions how Amy's living at home, and you can see that that sort of pains her a little bit. Ultimately, the conversation gets around to the subject of Helen's late husband, at which point Helen finally speaks up.
I know that Lyle always felt lazy after he had been with Jim. Jim had so many things in the fire. Lyle always looked up to Jim.
Well, Carol.
Yes?
Then why did he pull out of their deal?
What deal?
The Trellis Project was a corporate park. They were in development already with Carl Hewitt.
Well, that was 20 years ago. Helen, I don't even remember that. So, I mean...
Carol, it's so good running into you, really. And will you tell your family I said hi?
Okay, and you say hi to Amy and Bethany. And next time Lisa comes into town, we can all get together. I'm sure Lisa would love to see Amy. Take care of yourself, Helen.
You too, Carol.
Thank you. Bye.
So what I love the most about that clip is how once Carol puts up the walls and sort of indicates that she's not going to engage on this subject, Helen immediately backs down, because if she pursues this line of questioning, it's an argument, and she's not willing to get into it on this subject because it's too painful for her. And back at home, when we see how these thoughts of Helen's husband have been coming to her, and the episode starts to piece together towards this ultimate revelation that her husband ended up killing himself over a bad business deal, and the idea of a woman sort of surrounded by the ghosts in her home isn't entirely novel, but it's played with such delicacy, I think, and in concert with some great musical score work by Mark Mothersbaugh, that I find it really kind of lovely. So later, Levi, played by Luke Wilson, who is Amy's ex, comes over to drop off photos for Amy. He's actually spoiling for a fight with Amy, but she's not there, so he'll settle for Helen. The bubbling resentment between the two characters sort of spills over for a moment, and it seems momentarily that after this argument, which you're going to hear a little bit of in a second, that they both realize that they're arguing past each other because Amy's not there.
Don't get upset.
I'm not upset. I'm just fucking tired of it. So tell her, stop bugging me. Stop calling. Stop writing. Just give up on me, because I'm fine with it. Just move on. Quit telling me why you need to do it, why you have to do it, okay? Just leave me the fuck alone. It's all I ask, and I'll do the same.
Well, you know, Levi, it's kind of difficult for me to be sympathetic.
Sure it is, because you're getting what you've always wanted, Helen. You've wanted this for 15 years.
That is so not true, Levi. I'm sorry, but I liked you, and you know that I liked you. What I didn't like was that you never got it together. You kept getting worse.
Hey, she was no angel, believe me, and I'm not gonna get into specifics.
Oh, well, you were never gonna change. How many years were gonna go by?
I spent years, okay, listening to her cry about you, all right? Believe it. No, it's true. And you wanna know something? You wanna know what I never did? I never said, hey, just give up on your mom. Just walk away, just cut her out of your life. Can you say the same? Can you say the same about me?
So Levi leaves, and Amy comes home later, and we don't really know much about what happens in Amy's day, but now we've seen an entire day of Helen's, and we get to see Amy and Helen's interactions from Helen's perspective, and ultimately we have a lot more sympathy for her. And because Enlightened is such a good show, the new dynamic isn't that Helen is great and Amy is awful now. The way that this show is constantly encouraging us to empathize with these very flawed people is one of its biggest strengths. You even get to see Amy take a moment to give a thought to her mother when she's sort of looking through photos at the end. And it's not this huge catharsis, but it's a small moment, but it's a fine way to end a rather beautiful episode. So while not being a truly representative example of Enlightened in terms of this is what all of the show is, it's, I think, Consider Helen is instead a more standalone episode that rises above the already high quality of the show and demands attention all on its own. It may be trite to say that a good episode of TV functions like a short film, but for this one, I think that kind of a statement does apply. Thank you for your consideration of Consider Helen, and I will be back soon.
I will start. This is, at first when I turned it on, I said to Dave, oh, I'm kind of surprised he picked this because this is not a typical episode, but it is definitely one of the strongest episodes of the first season. Enlightened is such a good show. Please watch it on HBO Go if you never have. It's short. It won't take you long, and it is so, so worth it. And he's 100% right about that speech at the scene in the supermarket. While I was watching it this time, I just marveled, as he did, at like how long they let it go on. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just like letting that conversation breathe in a way that other shows I don't think would. And it's fascinating to see older people treated with this much care and drawn with this much specificity. You know, I joke on this show and definitely on Again With This about how I hate old people. And I mostly, when I say that, mean I hate old people being treated in pop culture as if they're hilarious, cute jokes in the Betty White style. And this is giving both of these women so much dignity and showing us both of their perspectives with an amazing amount of really like just care and attention and giving them both so much rope. The microaggressions that Carol unleashes, it's like every one of her lines is so barbed. Like you kind of laugh because it's so well done, but it's horrifying at the same time. And like, you know, stuff that Joe doesn't mention, like when Carol talks about her own daughter who evidently went to school with Amy and saying like, oh, she was always so jealous of Amy. All the boys liked her. Like, we get it. You think Amy was a slut. Like, it's just stuff like that that's like not even dwelled on. It is not the point. But it also makes you wonder, like, once we know how things, once we get it all spelled out, what actually happened to Amy's father and Helen's husband, you know, how much did Carol know about what happened with this deal? Because it feels like if she had known that, you know, this deal fell apart and then this guy killed himself, she wouldn't have brought it up. And anyway, I felt like this whole scene and this episode too kind of it demonstrates what I would call, like, in the grander scheme, the Fargo effect, which is if a show is well done, you can follow any one character and get a sense of like their whole experience in the way that this episode does so well. Like if characters are well, anyway, I already said it, I won't say it again. But I also I think it's important in that this episode happened because I think there probably was a lot of doubt in that first season between Laura Dern, who created the show with Mike White, about whether they were like getting it across that Amy is like a satiric figure. She's maybe not supposed to be taken at face value. And it might not have been clear until this episode, like exactly how self-involved we're supposed to think Amy is. But this one does it, even though, you know, it doesn't really damn her in particular. Seeing things from Helen's perspective puts Amy in a totally different light. And I love this episode. Joe, great, great presentation. That is all I have to say. Dave.
The supermarket scene was amazing. And old people seem to be masters of polite, like shade throwing or something. It was really well done. And you're right that it's refreshing to see older people drawn carefully. I really love episodes where you get like a take on a character that's sort of been on the sidelines or nibbling at the edges. And it's sort of like, you're right, when you say like Fargo, you know, where they'll have like almost a whole episode on the assassin or something like that, you know, and it's this great take. I found it kind of ballsy for this show to do something like this so quickly. Like this is nine. Yeah, it's the first season, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's a new show. It's not exactly the most, you know, broadly appealing subject matter, but here's this sort of episode where they just sort of go on a little road trip with this character. So that's, you know, it's interesting that they could do that. And God bless HBO for, you know, being a creator driven network, you know, that would let them do something like that. My only real quibble with this episode is that, the series is Luke Wilson just isn't strong here. Like I don't like his take on this guy. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've seen him in too much other stuff, you know, like he's, you know, kind of the goofy comic guy to me, but I couldn't get him out of that mold for this one. So he kind of threw me. I didn't really buy their interaction at the end when he came and dropped off the stuff. But otherwise, the episode's strength is definitely the mother character on her own and getting a view of that. And the supermarket scene is absolutely fantastic. Sarah?
Yeah, I agree. Barbara Barry is just everything in that scene. I agree that it is nice to see this kind of like microaggressions and competitive like grandmothering and sort of like, let me compare the accomplishments of other people to whom I am attached. Like, this is the state bird of my hometown. First of all, and you cannot walk down a full block of said town without this happening to you on some level, like people my age, people my parents' age, like it is a thing. And this was such a sharply, finely observed version of it that played out at exactly the like realistic pace that it would in real life without going for easy jokes or targets. And some of that is the actors, but a lot of that is the writing. And sometimes Mike White is like, I'll see what he's trying to do and I'm just not connecting with it. But this episode, I definitely like, there were some things that were a little obvious to me. Like I felt like the flashbacks that Helen was having was overused a little bit. I feel like we got it after the first two or three. But then the cumulative effect, when you do have the reveal about the dad and husband's suicide, and also the way that that was shot, which was very matter of fact,
yeah,
I would say, compared to what you would usually see on TV. I wouldn't say the episode has a documentary feel, but its ear for how things really happen.
Yeah.
And at what speed is excellent. There are a couple of little, I didn't quite buy it, quibbles that I have. Like, I didn't have a problem with Luke Wilson. And I didn't have a problem with the content of his speech. I thought it got a lot done. But I also felt like, I'm not sure this character would say these things in that way. But this is the first episode of the show I've ever watched, and frankly, I thought I was going to hate it. Laura Dern can sometimes be a trial. Like, she's so willing to make you uncomfortable that sometimes that's all you can see.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love my tall Hollywood sister. So thank you, Joe, for forcing me to watch an enlightened episode, which I wouldn't have done otherwise. And thank you, Barbara Barry, for fucking being awesome. Like, she's never not good. And even though she's always Barbara Barry and has that, like, bird thing going on.
Yeah.
She's the best at being Barbara Barry.
Yeah.
Nobody's better.
And it's funny when Dave said, like, on an episode of Fargo, you follow the assassin, like, well, we did that here too. Barbara Barry is the assassin of this episode. I just want to say one more thing before I turn it over to Stephanie. I do think the writing of this episode was subtle across the board. And like the questions that it makes you ask are so intriguing. And one of them that they don't really, like, they just lay it out there and then they sort of leave it for you to think about, which is that when we get to the part where Helen goes into the garage and we get the flashback of her seeing the car and her husband dead in it, having killed himself, like, and then she continued to live in the house. Like, the fact that she did that tells you so much about her character in, like, such an economical way that I found really fascinating. Okay, go ahead, Stephanie.
Okay, so I had never seen an episode of Enlightened before, and I didn't even know the premise of the show. And I didn't do any Googling or anything before I watched it. And because I decided ahead of time that since I knew nothing about the show, the way I wanted to kind of judge this episode was just if it was a good episode of TV rather than trying to compare it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have been able to compare it to any other episode. So, standalone, as Joe said in his presentation, it's great. It works, like he said, like a short film. I thought of it sort of as a short story or a vignette.
Yeah.
I didn't have to have any context about the characters or the plot to be able to enjoy it and be absorbed in it. So, on that metric, I think it totally wins. I really also enjoyed the supermarket scene. Those two women are just great actors, and the scene was well written, and it felt very real to me. It kind of touched a nerve because I feel like that conversation, even though it was a grandmother's competing conversation, can also happen as a mother of a baby.
Yeah.
Like, I have those kind of conversations with other mothers of babies all the time, and I hate it. It's that specific brand of conversation where women, it's usually, I don't think men do this. I think it's just women where you go, oh, that's so great for you, that kind of thing, where really it's not, you know, clearly the person thinks whatever thing is going on in your life is sad and terrible, but they're like, oh, that's great that your baby is crawling, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, she's not walking. Oh, that's so much better because you don't even need to worry about her falling down the stairs, things like that. And that, like, doesn't go away is what I'm figuring out. You know, you're a grandmother and you're still having those conversations. Except it's double because then you get to compare your kids and your grandkids. And I've seen, now that my mom's a grandmother,
Stephanie.
That's so awesome that your baby's not doing the stuff my baby's doing. It's just so hard when you have such a precocious child. You should really enjoy having a dumb baby, you know, it's that kind of thing. I see those kind of little Barbie conversations just playing out in, like, the Christmas cards my mom gets and stuff.
Totally.
It's so on point. It's so good. My one little hesitation about that scene plot-wise was, okay, so Carol's husband and Helen's husband had this business deal that fell through, and then Jim, Helen's husband, killed himself. You'd think Carol would approach that conversation with a little more tact and or avoid the subject of the dead husband altogether.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I mean? Like, oh, remember when our husbands had that failed business deal and then your husband killed himself? That was, you know, like, she's not going to even go near that. So for her to bring up, oh, Jim was such a hard worker, like, that was, it just felt like that wouldn't happen. More likely, if anyone's going to bring up Jim, it would be Helen. And I say that knowing nothing about the character, but I thought that was a little odd. But I can kind of let it go because I look at this episode as kind of a self-contained universe. And if you look at it as a short story, that interaction had to happen to move the short story forward.
Yeah.
So that I'm okay with it.
I can also buy that since the Carol character is an older person, like it's possible she doesn't actually remember what happened and just brought it up because it's like, well, I better change the subject off Amy and her failures. Whoops. You know, yeah, stepped in another minefield.
That's
but,
true.
You know, I don't need to retcon the show for you. That reaction is totally legitimate.
Yeah. And then I liked Luke Wilson, but I just like Luke Wilson, so
I like him too. I just didn't think he was cast correctly.
Like Luke Wilson. Yeah. Sarah, when you were talking about the way he was speaking, were you maybe thrown off by the Texas accent that he didn't try to cover up at all? Because the show, I think, is supposed to take place in Southern California, yes. So I was a little confused by his accent. Maybe that was
part of it. I fanficked in my head because he's supposed to be a former athlete,
and right,
a lot of them are, I don't know, like a lot of baseball players are from Texas, it seems like that wasn't the issue. It was how sort of like neat that rant was from someone who I think is supposed to be an alcoholic, and you know,
fair enough.
It was like just a little bit too neat, and you know, but no, the accent wasn't the problem, and it wasn't that he didn't act it well. It was just, you know, written a little too square.
Yeah.
All right, so we put that this to sense. Evute.
Sure.
All right, Tara.
Yay.
Stephanie.
Yay.
And Sarah.
It's a yes for me.
Yeah, I liked it. And you know what? I would vote this in just on the strength of the supermarket scene. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I probably would too.
All right. So that means that, there we go. All right. So Enlightened, season 1, episode 9, Consider Helen, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Winner of the week is Jane Lynch, and here's why. Not because of Angel from Hell, which is apparently terrible, but because on New Year's Eve, NBC aired a special, in quotation marks, episode of a version of Hollywood Game Night called NBC's New Year's Eve Game Night, and they did it in New York because obviously they had to be near Times Square, and Andy Cohen hosted it. And I am not an Andy Cohen hater. In fact, in recent years, he's really turned a corner for me. Like, I respect him so much more in a weird way because, like, every bit I see, I mean, I don't watch the Housewives shows or the reunions, obviously, but when I see clips and stuff, like, he asks questions fans would ask. Like, he is a fan and he, like, holds people's feet to the fire and stuff. I do think he's a good TV host. He was not equal to the task of wrangling 8 celebrities on this broadcast, which I wrote up for the site. I will link it in the show notes. It was a shit show. He could not keep the games on track at all, which I'm sure is not why most people were watching who are not nerds like me, if they were watching at all, because they were home on New Year's Eve like a nerd like me. But it was just super, like, there's so many offensive, dumb, terrible jokes all the way through it. And there was in particular a long, like, back and forth, really, like, gay joking, as I wrote in the post, like, there's a way that a certain kind of straight guy is going to make jokes about being gay that are, like, so over the top that it comes back around to being homophobic, aka the Nick Swardson effect. And I feel like this wren between Bob Saget and John Stamos would not stand under Jane's rule, basically. So I'm glad that she is continuing to be the host of Hollywood Game Night, where she belongs, surprisingly, because I've had my problems with her in the past. But yeah, she definitely is better at the helm than poor old Andy Cohen.
And loser of the week?
Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah.
But we're all winners, except as a society, we're all also kind of losers that it took this long to get bracelets on Quaaludes McGee over there. And speaking of old people and caricatures thereof, the old man cardigan and the cane that he brought to his arrest. Nice try. I'm not fucking buying it even a little bit. Fuck you, Pudding Pops. Enjoy jail.
Yeah, I don't really get the point of his lawyer being like, well, he's legally blind. Okay, that doesn't change the facts of things that happened 20 years ago.
He wasn't groping these people with his eyes, unfortunately.
No. Yikes.
Well.
Good luck segueing that, Dave. Sorry.
Does that bring up an interesting question, Dave?
It brings up a bunch.
Well played.
All right. Since Joe is not with us today, we will be playing a non-regulation game time, but that does not mean the stakes are low.
Oh.
Today's winner will receive not only 25 coveted Dave points.
What?
Oh.
But also will win one steel meal.
Wait, what?
What's a steel meal, you ask?
I do ask.
Steel meals are tasty treats that let you answer a question another player gets wrong and win those points.
Ooh.
You choose the time you eat your steel meal. It could be at the very end of a game where you want to like keep a tie from happening.
Yep.
It's going to be a strategic advantage to win this steel meal.
Oh my God.
It is a bonus for you being here, and it is a punishment for Joe for not showing up. That he is not eligible to win this steel meal. All right. So today we are playing That Eulogy Better Not Show Up on the Bill from Paul Chilman, who earns himself an extra credit that is redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. All right. In today's game, each clue is dialogue spoken at a funeral, memorial service, graveside visitation, or other commemoration of the dead for a TV character.
Love it.
All right. For 1 point, you're going to name the show the dialogue comes from. And for an additional point, you're going to name the deceased character in question.
Okay.
Some notes. First names alone are acceptable.
Okay.
In many cases, the deceased will be an obscure relative or something like that. A general description of that character will do.
Okay.
So-and-so's okay. Uncle wins the point.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Each show is featured only once. Benson is not represented. You did look
you
for one, though.
You won't stop me, sir.
And here's another clue. Not all these funerals were for dead people.
Oh.
All right. Ooh. Let's throw it to Picky, who's going to tell us who goes first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. We're going to go Tara.
Yep.
Sarah.
Yep.
Stephanie.
Stara.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. So are we ready to play the 48 question long, That Eulogy Better Not Show Up on the Bill?
I have one question.
Yes.
When you say that for people who may not be dead, mm-hmm. is the idea that these are characters that later came back to life or turned out not to have been dead?
It has a couple meanings, but that is one of them.
Okay.
Or yeah. Are dogs?
Maybe.
Oh,
okay.
I think you've hit on both of the things that are
exceptions. Okay, great.
Okay.
High five.
Tara.
Yes.
Blank is when the character's name is mentioned.
Got
in
it.
The eulogy. He was a good man. He was a kind man. He gave to his community and asked little in return. He never... That's a woman? Dear Lord. Well, I guess most of what I said can't be salvaged.
I believe that's the one that gave the game its name. It's from The Simpsons. And I can't remember her name, but it's Marge's aunt.
That is correct. Okay. Great Aunt Gladys. So you got 2 points. All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
Well... I brought a very cool t-shirt in honor of the great Minnesota Twins for very obvious reasons, I think. So what do you bring, Dee? Surfboard wax to symbolize the waves that have been pounding the shores for thousands of years. But really, it's just a brief moment in time.
Oh, Jesus. All right, that's Beverly Hills, 90210. And the dead are Twain, Dead Scott, and the time capsule.
Nice.
That is correct for 2 points. All right, Stephanie. Blank, yep. Blank was the only one of the lot of you that I could stand. I like the lady. Understand, Monkey Boy? She was decent. She didn't put on airs. She always had a nice cuppa for me. And she never treated me like a freak.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to guess American Horror Story.
That's a good guess. You're in the right genre. Anybody know that one?
No.
As Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that's the mom, Joyce Summers.
Oh yeah. Kappa, course. Spike. Tara. Speech, I bet. Yes.
If I die before you, please don't let them read Wind Beneath My Wings at my funeral. Who knew it had so many verses? You think that we didn't know him or his family? Sorry. Let me start. Who knew it had so many verses? You think that we didn't know him or his family didn't? Maybe he changed. They said he liked nighttime walks in the snow. He hated the snow.
I do not know either.
Do you want me to read that again?
Yeah. Can you get through it without coughing, open mouth, Amy Jellicoe?
Your lies, Dave.
Sorry.
The show is extra hot great.
Oh, for Christ's sake, fuck off, Cole.
If I die before you, please don't let them read Wind Beneath My Wings at my funeral. Who knew it had so many verses? You think that we didn't know him or his family didn't. I don't know. That's why it's written. Maybe he changed. Maybe he liked nighttime walks in the snow. He hated the snow. No idea?
Yeah, no, I still don't know.
That's The Good Wife. That's Will's eulogy. All right, Sarah. Yep. They say there's no two people on Earth exactly the same. No two faces. No two set of fingerprints. But do they know that for sure? Because they would have to get everybody together in one huge space. And obviously, that's not possible, even with computers. Not only that, they'd have to get all the people who ever live, not just the ones now. So they got no proof. They got nothing. Blank may have passed, but who's to say there isn't another blank just like her or will be? Maybe not with the same fears and paranoia, but the same. What I'm saying is... Trails off.
Wow. That went on so long that I actually figured out that it is from The Sopranos. And wow, that really is so uncomfortable. Everyone should rewatch that scene. It's really brilliant. Livia Soprano is the dead lady.
That is good for 2 points. Yeah, that did go on. All right, Steph. Annie. People call you Steph. Did I just like do that thing where I gave you a nickname that you don't really use?
Oh, no, that's what most
you
people
You got
call
it,
me,
S.
Actually.
All right. Either way, today is a day to celebrate life. Today is a day to celebrate today. And that is why I can't think of a better time to do this. Come on. Come on, my little hen of the woods. Friends, family, lovers, older family friends that I can never remember the names of. Neri and I are getting married right now with all of you as our witnesses.
Miri? Neri.
N-E-R-I.
Oh, gosh. I don't have the first faintest clue. I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
That's Orange is the New Black. That's Piper's grandmother's funeral.
Where, oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
The brother.
Yeah.
His.
Mm-hmm. Tara Ariano.
Panty entrepreneur. Yes.
You make me sick. And now for the quote. You make me sick. You damn hypocrites make me sick. Everybody knew she was in trouble, but we didn't do anything. All you good people. You want to know who killed blank? You did. We all did. And pretty words ain't going to bring her back, man. So save your prayers. She would have laughed at them anyways.
Justified. I have no idea.
Who killed blank is a good clue.
Okay.
Who killed blank? Who killed Laura Palmer? Twin Peaks.
Okay. I was actually going to guess Dawson's Creek.
All right, Sarah, see if you can guess this one. I told them her death takes place in the shadow of new life. She's not really dead if we find a way to remember her. What is that? Star Trek 2.
Not really dead if we find a way to remember. Star Trek 2. Oh, God. I don't know.
This one I know.
Yeah.
Seinfeld?
Yep.
And it's Dead Susan?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All right, Stephanie. Sure, yep. Our relationship had its ups and downs and the occasional restraining order. But at the end, we ran away together to Paris, where he asked me to marry him. I said yes, and the next few days were the happiest of my life. Nothing could spoil it, not even when I came home from shopping and found him taking a shower with another woman.
Well, I know this is wrong, but I just want to say Sex and the City, because I wish that had happened.
Incorrect. Anybody want to take a guess at that
one? No.
2 and a Half Men, Charlie Harper.
Sure.
Yeah. What, Tara?
Yep.
What is he wearing? I left him an hour ago and he was wearing Ralph Lauren. But it's what blank would have wanted. He'd love that prep school. Wait, do not close that coffin. Give me your tie.
Prep school. Gossip Girl?
Desperate Housewives.
Oh.
Rex Van De Kamp. That's a great name.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, a man died. His friends and family are here to mourn him, and that's all the story you need. Were you friends of the disgraced detective blank? That's for Sarah. Disgraced detective blank.
Disgraced detective. Oh my god. Well, now I can't get this out of my head as the answer, so let's try Sherlock.
Oh, I like that guy.
The shield. That's Curtis.
The shield.
Lem.
Oh, sure.
The show that lives on Game Time.
Yeah.
Oh my god. We're not gonna watch you.
Stephanie. I just gotta say goodbye to my Uncle Blank. Marty, come here a minute. Is this his five wood? No, someone must have switched it. This is a tough one.
I just watched this one again.
Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, guys. I'm sorry.
Curb your enthusiasm. Yep, Marty's dad, Leo.
Yeah.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Look, what I'm trying to say is that if I were dying and I decided that even though I'd never particularly be into, say, Enya before, but now that I really, really was into Enya, and that, in fact, I thought Enya was great and that Enya died for our sins and that I wanted an Enya-themed funeral with pictures of Enya and lots of mentions of Enya, then I think I would be it would be a bit bloody rich for my sister to ban all mention of Enya from my funeral. Yeah?
Peep Show.
Yeah, we just watched that. Yeah, thanks, Vicky.
It's Jeremy's uncle?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jeremy, nice Uncle pull. Ray.
Only at the end.
Yeah. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Whatever he did, he made us the men we are today, didn't he? And what's that? We run this fucking town. We don't run anything, brother, and he can rot in hell.
Run this fucking town.
Whatever he did, he made us the men we are today, didn't he? And what's that? We run this fucking town. We don't run anything, brother. And he can rot in an L.
I really don't know, so I'm going to guess True Blood.
Ooh. Right network. Brother's running a town with a bad dad. That's Boardwalk Empire.
That's
Nucky and Eli. His father. All right, bring us into our first score break. Stephanie. Blank and his wife had an open marriage. It kept him happy. It kept his wife happy. Hi, Evelyn. And it definitely kept me happy because for 46 wonderful years, he spent night after night exploring every nook and cranny of my body. Grow up, you prudes.
I don't know, but I wish I did know. I have no idea.
I know I've seen it.
Yeah. That's Parks and Rec. That's Mayor Walter Gunderson's.
Oh, yeah.
All right, that's question 15. There's our first score break. What do we got?
All right, well, it's very close.
Yeah.
In a sense. Stephanie is looking to get on the board, and Sarah and I are tied with four each. This game is hard.
Yep.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Paul is not so chill, man. Sorry.
All right, Tara. I feel better that you guys aren't knowing the ones I'm missing, too, so it's making me feel
slightly
it's tough.
Better. All right, yes.
May the goddess purify your soul. Amet. May the goddess recite your name in the whispers of the wind, Amet.
Can you, how are you spelling Amet?
A-H-M-E-T.
Okay. Goddess, God. What shows have goddesses? Yeah, I don't know. Charmed?
Farscape.
Farscape.
No. Aaron's son.
Wow. My backup guess, if it wasn't Charmed, was Transparent.
Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
I remember when my mom used to come over in her furry boots and you would hump her foot. And I thought, and we thought that was funny. And then you got spayed and you didn't do it anymore.
You got spayed and you didn't do it anymore. Well, the deceased is a hound on a show with a dog.
Yep.
And the only show I could think of with a dog, all of a sudden, it's definitely not this dog. Because I don't think Tiger got killed and Marie is not a girl. Shit. I don't know.
Freaks and Geeks. That's Goliath from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Stephanie.
Boo.
In 1977, two fully loaded 747s crashed into each other on Tenerife. Does anybody know how big a 747 is? I mean, it's way bigger than the 737. And we're talking about two of them. Nearly 600 people died on Tenerife. But do any of you even remember it at all? Any of you? I doubt it.
Oh, I don't know. Sorry.
Anybody?
No.
Breaking Bad. That was the funeral for the victims of the plane collision. I've been to Tenerife, guys. It's in the Canary Islands.
Oh, yeah?
Cool.
Yeah. I'm cool. My mom won a Halloween chocolate bar sweepstakes called Scary Canary. It was a trip to Canary Islands. It was terrible. Tara.
Yes.
Phone rings. That's a little stage direction. Okay. Phone rings. So, is it heaven or hell? I didn't want a funeral for this very reason, Phone rings. So, is it heaven or hell? I didn't want a funeral for this very reason, Fee.
Pushing Daisies.
Orphan Black. Orphan Black.
Oh,
Sarah Manning. Orphan Black. Sarah.
Yeah.
And now, as we say goodbye to blank, a phrase comes to mind. It was coined by my very own father. She's such a groovy lady.
She's such a groovy lady. I don't know.
That's Frasier. Frasier's Aunt Louise. All right, Stephanie. I was going to sing him a hymn, but as I'm sitting here thinking of blank, there's a song that he loved, and it'll always remind me of him. And then he sings "Good Day," Green Day's "Good Riddance," "Time of Your Life."
I don't know.
Anybody know that show?
Everwood?
No, ER. Oh. Scott from ER. Probably after.
ER had a Scott.
Scott Anspaw.
Oh, okay.
Tara.
Yeah.
You told me once that you weren't a hero. There are times when I didn't even think you were human, but let me tell you this. You are the best man and the most human being that I've ever known, and no one will ever convince me that you told me a lie. And so, there. Difficulty level in this game, 8, 9? It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Sherlock from Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes from Sherlock. All right, Sarah.
Yeah.
At this point of the service, I would like Mrs. Blank to kindly step forward. I'm sorry, I meant his wife to step forward. I meant his current wife. Uh-oh.
Well, hell. 6 feet under.
That's Cheers, Eddie Lebeck from Cheers.
All right.
Stephanie. I just wanted to say, although blank turned out to be several, if not dozens of rats, we loved him enough for dozens of rats, and that is all that counts.
This sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, it might be.
Bunch of rats.
Yeah.
In a trench coat. I'm sure it's animated.
First of all, guess the deceased. So I think you got a point opportunity just to guess the deceased here.
Really?
Yeah, just guess. Remember, it can be generic. It could be somebody something, or it could be a thing or something.
Read it again.
Yeah, Mr. I just want to say, although blank turned out to be several, if not dozens of rats, we love him enough for dozens of rats, and that's all that counts.
Oh, wait. This is that thing from, is it? No. Is it the rat that's dead?
Well, whoops. I mean, the show's not right, but you said the rat.
Wait.
So we're going to give you a point on the rat.
It is.
Just trying to draw you out.
The show.
It's news radio.
Let her,
news radio.
Oh, no, I was wrong. Never mind.
She already said How I Met Your Mother. You don't get two guesses.
I was going to say that. That's what I thought. It was How I Met Your Mother with the rat thing.
Oh, yes. The cock-a-
You know, there was like a
mouse.
Bug or
yeah,
a rat.
Yeah. The cock-a-mouse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
Tara.
Me. Yep.
There's no coffin. He didn't want one. It's more natural this way.
Is this 6 feet under? Oh, okay. Is it Nathaniel?
Is that Nate? No, Nathaniel's a dad, right?
Oh, yeah, no.
That's Nate Fisher. Nate Fisher.
Of course.
Sarah. I don't want a trial. He'll squirm his way to freedom given the chance. I want him dead. Please, Jamie, you have to. He was our son, our baby boy. There's a clue in there. I don't want a trial.
Law and Order.
No. Anybody?
No.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's Jamie, Joffrey. Of course.
Yeah, Jamie. Okay.
Not
Stephanie.
Jamie Ross? No.
Okay. All right.
Oh.
I think you'll probably get this one. Don't you remember? We told
don't be so
you.
Sure.
Blank died. He's dead. Oh, yeah, I remember. Well, I'll give it to him when he comes back. Big Bird, Blank's not coming back. Why not? Big Bird, when people die, they don't come back. Ever? No, never.
Okay, so this is Sesame Street. And I know one of the, like, actual people died. Was it... Oh, I want to say Gordon, but it's either Gordon or Mr. Hooper. Ugh. Gordon.
Mr. Hooper.
Damn it. Oh, come on.
Plus. Yeah, Gordon's still around, isn't he?
Yeah, there was a thing of like a maybe last year where people were trying to find out where he is now, like track down that actor because he's like gone off the grid. Yeah. Anyway, yes.
Where's your camera? Aren't you going to take some pictures? Pictures of what? Crying babies covered in chocolate, people singing happy birthday to my son who've never met him before. The whole routine. Where do you think we are?
Okay, that's Scrubs. And it's the...
You can describe it in general
terms.
Okay, it's
the Brendan Fraser character who was Krista Miller's character, Jordan's brother.
Yes, his name was Ben Sullivan, but that is good enough for the purposes of this game. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
The following are names of the men and women who did not die in service, but are in fact alive today because of blank. Major Samantha Carter, Dr. Daniel Jackson, Colonel Jack O'Neill, Teal'c, I don't know, Sergeant Connie Smith, Major James Hewles, Senior Airman Simon Wells. Teal'c, I guess.
I suppose I shouldn't ask.
I'll even spell that for you because who knows? Maybe it'll jog your memory. T-E-L, that's T-E-A-L, apostrophe C. Mm-hmm. Any guesses?
Enterprise.
Yeah, that's a good guess. Stargate SG-1. Stargate SG-1. All right, bring us into our second score break.
Space.
Sorry.
Space!
Blank knew everything there was to know about tax law. Shelters? Call blank. Foreign tax treaties? Call blank. Ad valorem? Call blank. During the sweeping 1982 revisions, one man stood as a beacon in the deep fog of tax code confusion. That man was my friend and mentor, a giant in the minefield of tax law and his ever-changing fiscal implications.
Tax law, huh? I don't know.
Anybody want to guess 1982?
Mm-mm. L.A. Law.
Yep.
No.
Correct.
Who was the dead person?
Norman Leland? Chaney.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Blank was a believer, Tara. He was a man of faith. He was a much better man than I will ever be, and I'm very sorry I murdered him.
Oh.
Blank was a believer. He was a man of faith. He was a much better man than I will ever be. I'm very sorry I murdered him.
Man of faith. Lost? Oh.
Hey.
Lock? Hey!
Jeez.
Thanks, liberal education. All right. Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting, blank, will lie beside two brothers. One he likely killed, the other he killed for certain. And he's been killed now in return. So much blood.
Deadwood.
Hey!
What?
Nice.
The guy with the hat.
The guy with the hat. Now, I am allowing for some generalities, but the guy with the hat might be a little too general.
The guy, the grubby guy with the hat? Guy, yeah. Saul Star?
Wild Bill Hickok.
Oh.
All right, Stephanie. I'm angry at you because you left us with a mother who was crazy. I'm angry at you because you hardly pay attention to us, and when you did, it was usually violent. I'm angry at you for making me feel I couldn't trust men. In fact, I couldn't even trust my own husband for the first 5 years of our marriage.
Oh, see, I think I have seen this.
You probably have.
Yet, I don't know what it is. Give me a sec.
Yeah.
Can you read it again, Dave?
Sure. I'm angry at you because you left us with a mother who was crazy. I'm angry at you because you hardly pay attention to us, and when you did, it was usually violent. I'm angry at you for making me feel I couldn't trust men. In fact, I couldn't even trust my own husband for the first 5 years of our marriage. I will give you an additional hint. Sitcom.
Sure sounds jolly. Oh gosh, I'm gonna kick myself because I'm sure I've heard that before, but I just cannot come up with what show it is. Sorry.
Anybody?
It's Roseanne.
It is Roseanne.
It's her dad.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Oh, poor Fang. He's so upset. Yes, well, Fang and Blank were in the same graduating class at spy school.
Fang. Spy school. Archer?
Get smart.
Oh.
Smart. A fake funeral. Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, my friends. You're here now watching this image of me because I have died. It probably happened while I was on duty, and quickly, which is what I expected. Also one of the dumbest deaths, and whatever. Anyways.
Oh.
Mm.
Bonus hint.
Bonus hint.
Oh, dumb deaths.
Yeah.
And we already used LA Law, so... dumb deaths.
Not dumb like notable dumb. Dumb like unnecessary and poorly handled.
Gotcha. Probably happened while I was on duty and quickly.
Can I give Sarah another hint?
Sure.
And navally? Oh,
no, I'm going to give you another hint. It has something to do with space!
Oh, space! Okay. Now my head is like completely emptied of space shows.
Hello, my friends.
Space.com.
You are here now watching this image of me because I have died. It probably happened while I was on duty and quickly, which is what I expected.
I'll just say it's Battlestar Galactica.
Star Trek: The Next Generation. Tasha Yar.
Oh, of
that
course.
Stupid goo episode with the
really?
Black.
That's how she went out.
Oh, no, she didn't get killed by... Well, yeah, she got killed by black goo, and Riker falls into the black goo, and this is a whole stupid thing. It's retarded.
Wow.
Excuse me? Tasha. I said retarded. All right, Stephanie, check it out. Giants, Cowboys. You're watching a football game at a funeral? No, it's the pregame. I'm going to watch it at the reception. You are a frightening, frightening man.
I don't know, guys. This is not a good game for me.
Tara?
Is that the league?
Friends?
Friends, yep.
Friends.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
The blank I knew was a self-centered, egotistical, boot-licking, no-good sack of slime in a $500 suit. His every action had an ulterior motive. If blank gave you the shirt off his back, you could bet that his pants and underwear would soon follow.
Wow.
Here's your hint. I can start giving additional hints.
Okay.
Yeah, sitcom.
Please do.
Okay.
Nocturnal sitcom.
Oh. Night Court. Is it Dan Fielding? I didn't even remember that he died.
He didn't, but...
Fake funeral. I forgot.
Sarah D. Bunting. I was friends with blank as much as I could be because blank had a toxic personality that bordered on radioactive. Blank could be cruel and blank could be spiteful and blank could certainly be petty. She spent her days mischievously stirring up trouble and creating calamity and generally taking pleasure in other people's pain. You know, in Sunday school, they teach us that God made man in his image. Well, if God made blank in his image, then what does that say about God?
Is this from My Funeral?
Seriously. Also, this takes place in space. No, it doesn't. That's your clue. It does not take place in space. It is a show that has been mentioned incorrectly in this game already. By you, I believe. That it is a show really I know you watched.
It is not in space.
It is a show you watched and wrote on.
Oh, additional super hint.
Yep.
Toxic personality. Oh, God. Felicity?
Oh, good guess.
Dawson's Creek, Abby
God
Morgan.
Damn it!
All right.
Jen!
A little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants.
Oh, classic.
Aw.
Wait, is that my clue?
Yep.
Yes.
A little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants.
Oh my God, you guys.
Here's your clue. It is a sitcom. It named after the person that it stars in. And this is a classic scene. Probably the most famous episode from
the show. It probably is the most famous episode of the show. Other than maybe the pilot.
Yeah.
Okay. Named after the person who's in it. Oh, gosh.
One last clue. Involves a circus performer.
Circus performer.
All right. Anybody?
It's Chuckles, right?
Chuckles the Clown from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Correct, yeah. All right, Tara.
Before my time.
Yes.
She's young. Folks, a lot of people would look at this string of five deaths and say, this is weird. Something really strange is going on here. But I just want to say, Maggie, on behalf of all of us, that we don't really think it's your fault and we don't believe in any curse. Right, everybody? Hey, come on. You can do better than that.
That's Northern Exposure.
Yeah.
It's one of Maggie's many dead boyfriends.
Yeah. Rick in particular.
Rick, yes. Of course.
All right, Sarah.
Not Reek.
No.
He came to us like a shamrock on a sunny day. He graces our lives like an avocado salad. And let me just say this, it's from the 80s, and you're going to like it when your answer comes together.
He graces our lives like an avocado salad?
Yep. He graced our lives like an avocado salad. He came to us like a shamrock on a sun.
I appreciate it when your hints come together, because I believe this must be the A-Team.
Yes, but who? Now, those A-Team guys, they're quite the scammers, so there's a good possibility this was a fake death as part of some crazy plan.
Yeah, I feel like this character faked his death a lot of times or offered to. Let's go with Hal and Matt Murdock.
Oh, it's the big cheese. It's Hannibal Smith.
Damn it!
Here lies... Mercenary Space! Here lies blank. Here lies his gun. He was bad, and now he's done.
Sarah hates this show, even though she's never actually watched
it. It is a florally titled show.
Florally titled?
Yes.
Pushing Daisies.
Hey!
And do you know
thanks for the really help, like, overabundance of clues, you guys. I'm special. I need them.
Any idea on the character?
Nope.
All right, that's good for 1 point. That was Dwight Dixon. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
And we know how he died, flying into the glass doors. But you know what? I don't think he was being stupid. I think he just really, really wanted to come inside our building to spread his cheer and lift our spirits with a song.
I know this song.
The Office?
Yep.
Some kind of bird.
A bird is the correct answer. Yes. All right. For Sarah D. Bunting, the speeches we heard today are nothing more than words, but I will prove that I love my father more than anybody. As you can see, this is a normal coffin. Take me halfway around. I will become my dead father's body as I'm lowered into his grave. This is a sitcom. It is a sitcom that has had two lives. Speaking of funerals.
Oh, yes.
Does it rhyme with flamunity?
Is that your answer?
Yes.
It doesn't.
Damn it!
It rhymes with forested fulfillment.
Oh,
that was George Bluth's funeral. Okay, bring us into our penultimate score break.
Oh, God.
Stephanie. I kind of enjoy just giving away stupid clues now, though. I'm making my own.
Hey, what else can you do?
He had demons. Everyone here knows that. But he lived with them. And he taught me how to live with them. This past year, he helped me with my daughter. He took care of her. He loved her with that same crazy love when I couldn't. I don't think Franny will remember him, but I'm taking over now. Dad, I'm taking over. Oh, that should be a comma. Taking over now, Dad, and I'll remember for her.
Damn it.
Sarah knows it. Sarah knows it. It's something Sarah covers. It's something Sarah watches.
There's another hint. It's a show that's currently on.
Yep.
Oh.
Not like right now. The season is over.
So many hints.
Yeah, so many hints and yet. And yet. As usual, I don't know.
All right, Sarah. What is it?
Foamland.
Foamland, correct.
And yes, the character was Mr. Matheson.
Yes, Frank. Frank. Yep. All right. That is question 45. Everybody has one question left.
Oh, boy. Well, Stephanie has 3.
Yep.
Sarah has 6.
Yep.
I have 15.
15?
That's what I said very quietly.
Each one of these questions, your last question, is worth 10 points.
Whoa!
Tara Arrieta.
It won't help.
Wait. 10 points difficult. Total if you get both halves or 10 points for each half?
10 points for both.
Oh.
Each.
Each. 10 points for each.
Wait.
Okay.
It's difficult.
That's exciting.
Ouch.
It's difficult that at this moment of national pride, we have to deal with some sad personal news. On Sunday night, we lost our founder.
Our founder? I have no idea. No, I don't know.
It is a period show.
Okay.
It's done.
Is it Mad Men?
It is Mad Men.
Oh,
Burt Cooper's
Burt
funeral.
Burt Cooper.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, the door is open. The door is open. Here we go. Here is your non-space show clue.
Oh! Advanced clue.
You were taken too soon, blank. I'll miss you. Should we pour some out for our homie? What the hell are they doing? Wine glass funeral. It's only weird the first time you see it.
Oh, on space,
fuck,
you said.
I know it.
All right. You were taken too soon, blank. I'll miss you. Should we pour out some for our homie? What the hell are they doing? Wine glass funeral. It's only weird the first time you see it. A big clue there. Literally a big clue.
Yes. Like, as in the wine glasses in Cougar Town.
Hey!
That's Big Lou, the wine glass from Cougar Town. That's good for 20 points. All right, Stephanie.
15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Here's your chance to get out of the basement and put Tara.
No, it's not going to happen, guys. It's all right.
You know.
Give it to me anyway.
Blank and I used to fuck around big time. We'd fucking party hard, ride our vehicles around, and slay ass. We also watch a lot of cinema films together. We loved the movie Top Gun, and oftentimes we would joke each other who was Goose and who was Tom Cruise. Well, now that Blank is dead, I guess we know who Goose is. Blank is Goose, because in that motion picture, Goose dies. So Blank is dead, so he would be Goose, and that would make me Tom Cruise. I'm Tom Cruise, guys.
Just the cadence. I mean, I have no idea, but I think, is it Eastbound and Down?
Nice!
I tried to sell it.
Which is a show I don't watch, yeah. So I would like to get some credit for that. And the character, no clue because I don't watch the show.
Yeah, there's a character named Shane Dog. Shane Dog, but that's worth 10 points. Well done. A good way to end it. All right, let's hear our scores here at the end
all
of the
right.
game.
All right, well, Stephanie finished with 13, I had 15, Sarah had 26.
Wow, all right.
That's ridiculous, but
Sarah.
Congratulations,
25 Sarah. Dave points is what
25
she earned?
Dave points and a steel meal.
Okay, adding it to the Dave point tally.
Of all the people who needed a steel meal, it was Sarah.
Well, that game was fucking hard, but I think we had some fun.
Yeah, it was fun, but wow, we're dumb.
I should put some clues in there, I guess, maybe. Some, in the start. Oh, well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We rose to the occasion of Bachelor's 20th season premiere. Discuss whether or not the events portrayed on Making a Murderer worse than Jazz before going around the dial with stops at Call the Midwife, Last Tango in Halifax, The Art of More, and Lucifer. Joe successfully enlightened us on Enlightens Consider Helen for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah D. Bunting was the winner of this week's TV character Eulogy Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Arianna,
I really believe my husband could be in this room.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Can I steal you for a minute?
And Stephanie Green. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great. And this is for you, birthday girl Emily.
Yay!
This is Extra Hot Great Minis. Today's topic, Benedict Cumberbatch. With apologies to Eddie Izzard and Bob Duca, the following are names which breakout Sherlock star Benedict Cumberbatch will not answer to. Engelbert Rabblecatch. Finger Slurp Needle Thatch. Jingle Bear Fumble Rant. Eggy Bread Wonderlatch. Sainsbury Value Match. SpongeBob Square Patch. Soothsayer Fortune Batch. Tiny Garden Cucumber Ranch. Reginald Bumberflat. Buckingham Super Slam. Edinburgh Slumber Party. River Styx Cobble Bricks. Cranny Nook Muffin Man. Escalator Roundabout. Manchester Dunderbreath. Loggerhead Chariot Dash. Lick'em Stick Mumblecore. Turtleneck Dumbledore. Office Policy Open Door. Chrysanthemum Oprah Snatch. Cormorant Thundercrotch. Saskatchewan Pancake Stack. Major General Flapjack. Griddle Cake on Avon. Gaslight Thundercloud. Steampunk Mother Hen. Debrickashaw Ferguson. Dance Pocket Cabbage Patch. Cumberbun Man Mustache. Bumbershoot Pageant Sash. Brer Abbott Briar Patch. Lichtenstein Hitler Stash. Water Closet Lift Torch. Chip Buddy Bread Pudding. Bangers Kipper Mash. Handlebar Chimney Sweep. Deep Moat Castle Keep. Cattle Prod Rattlestick. Mortimer Candle Snatch. Jack Ripper Slash Attack. Collectible Bric-a-Brac. Sterling Half Pence. Bagel's Vassal Homage. Hastings Stony Henge. Caravan Bumpy Patch. Letterbox Summer House. Litterbox Smelly Cat. Everett Pooper Shoot. Ben and Jerry's Down the Hatch. Bandicoot Cul-de-Sac. Parlor Trick Humble Snatch. Thistle Dick Panty Waste. Barefoot Candy Witch. Bigfoot Clamor Splat. Beef Eater Double Gloucester. Benetton putter shot, cinnamon toasting crunch, cardamom winter garden, toss pot drinkleberry, Pippa costermonger, Vindaloo baby smack, blossom pop goober drone, Malachi hopping town, Levington uterus, Kensington mark my words, Easterly heffalump, Cornwallis poopy pants, Wainscoting tinkle baron,
oh my god, so much longer than I remember.
Burger trolley fair, Ethel red crumb packer, Nostradrippus copper pot, Chesterfield wingback, Cumberhump balderdash, Baldrick cunning plangus, Egbert bandersnatch, Merchant ivory tusk, Trafalgar Walker crisps, Templeton faceman peck, Applebee's happy hour, and Burger Time pickle chef. Thanks to Stephanie, Adam, Jeff, Wendy, another Jeff, Sarah, Pamela, Omar, Steven, John, Lindsay, and Dave for the help with this list.
Wow. That's like easily seven times as long as I remember it being.
Oh, wow.